I like the people I work with generally, with four exceptions. But someone committed a crime, and I did not become a Lackawanna County volunteer sheriff's deputy to make friends. And by the way, I haven't.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Take two, my computer just crashed. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, you can follow me on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Weiss, hello. The Giants won.
They did.
It was ugly, but sometimes all you got to do is win. And face probably their toughest test in a few days on Monday Night Football. Before we get into everything, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. A little tired. A little under the weather. I have the Vegas flu, if you will.
There you go.
Not COVID, just a little bit of a cold. But, you know, we're here. We're relatively happy and healthy. So let's discuss the game.
Yes.
I'll let you start. Generally, one of the messier games we've watched, especially in the beginning. You know, I forget what your prediction was. I did not have the Giants winning this game.
Me neither.
Sam Darnold was fucking atrocious.
Yeah.
That makeshift offensive line was somehow even worse. Giants pass rush got it done, and the Giants moved to 2-5.
Yeah, I mean, I think this game showed a lot that Sam Darnold is. You can take Sam Darnold out of the New York Jets, but you can't take the New York Jets out of Sam Darnold. Yeah, he's not a good quarterback, and I think Carolina knows that, and I think he's not the long-term answer there. But for the Giants, I thought, you know, it was really – felt really good to actually win a game, dominate an opponent like that. I know the game was close in the first half. It was like – I mean, it was like a baseball score for the first half.
5-3,
something like that, and – you know, in the second half, I thought the Giants were able to force some turnovers, take advantage of turnovers, get some points. There were some ugly moments, especially in the first half in the red zone where they, I think, ran the ball four straight times.
And got stuffed.
Got stuffed, yeah. And you really thought that, okay, this could be embarrassing. But, you know, got to give the Giants credit. They hung in there. I said it, you know, after the game, I thought it was probably Daniel Jones' best performance of the season. I know people will point to the New Orleans game, but I think, you know, going into it, I mean, he had without his left tackle, without his three best receivers, and without his starting running back. And, you know, he didn't have a great statistical game. I mean, he was, you know, I think 23 of 33 for a little over 200 yards and a touchdown. But, I mean, he made plays in key moments and to extend drives, convert on third downs, obviously the great one-handed catch. And I think I want to ask you a question. Is Daniel Jones graduated from just being athletic to now a freak athlete?
Well, you know, without getting into the stereotypes and who each label is typically reserved for in the mainstream media.
Right.
You know, we've always known that he was, I don't want to say a freak athlete, but, and again, here, you know, you might as well just, you know, call me Ethan, ESPN, but underratedly fast. Like not one of those guys that's going to wow you because of how quick he is, but just because of his size, it's like once he takes off and gains his full speed, you're like, wow, holy shit, like this guy can move.
Right.
That one-handed catch was fantastic.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
Which, ironically enough, probably a better catch than Dante Pettis is ever going to have in his entire career.
Right. It was a spectacular one-handed catch, great for the internet. It was awesome to see. That was a freakish athletic type play. I love the comparisons to the Odell thing. I saw all the memes and all the funny things. It was awesome. And I thought, look, big picture wise, he made plays in a really, really tough situation. And I think he did what Sam Darnold couldn't. And Sam Darnold basically showed that he sort of needs a perfect environment to succeed. And I thought Daniel Jones showed that, hey, things can be tough. But I can get you a win in certain circumstances. And I understand, you know, people, and this sort of ticks me off, is that going into the game, everyone pointed to the Panther defense and how they're going to, you know, have their way because the Giants were missing, you know, so many players on offense. But after the game, the conversation was, well, the Panther defense is not that good. No, I think the Panthers have a good defense in the National Football League. They have an above average defense, and especially their defensive line. And I thought, given the circumstances, Daniel Jones against a very, you know, above average defense had a good game, protected the football, made plays, especially off script. The offensive line was not good. He was pressured a lot. It's not like he was had a clean pocket to throw from, but he made plays. He made plays to Dante Pettis. He made plays to Colin Johnson, to out of the backfield to Devontae Booker. So you have to like what you saw there, and you got to give Jason Garrett some credit. I thought he had a good game plan coming in. The Giants were able to protect the football offensively, and I thought their quarterback really, you know, when we talk about, you know, is he the guy or is this a franchise quarterback, you got to get performances like that from your quarterback where, like I said, shit's not easy. You're playing with basically a scout team, you know, offense around you, and what do? You know, at times put the team on your back, make plays, win the game. And I think that's important. Does that mean that Daniel Jones has to do this again? No. What I'm saying is that it was a game. It was a tough circumstances. The team was battling injuries. And Daniel Jones made plays, won his team the game. It could have been very easy for Daniel Jones to have a Sam Darnold-like performance. And we chalk it up as, well, you know, he's missing all these guys. But no. Daniel Jones played a very good game. I think the best of the season, given the circumstances. And he put his team in position to win the game. And I think you got to give him credit for that. And you got to sort of come away saying, okay, we hadn't seen something like that yet. We saw it. That's awesome. Now we move forward.
Yeah. I don't disagree. Again, it was nothing that wowed you. But it's a guy who's been put at a disadvantage in almost every area for the entire season. It's either at been times, coaching, yeah. It's either been the defense, it's been offensive line. The offensive line.
Skill position, and again, like, out. Yep.
Exactly. And like, we're not convinced that he's the guy. I'm not convinced that he's the guy. But you, like you just said, you need performances like that,
right,
to start convincing you.
Exactly.
Where everything around you is wrong and you just will your team to victory. And again, it's not like, yeah, okay, the Panthers put up 3 points, but the Giants still put up points, right? Exactly. Like, even if Sam Darnold had an average game, like, the Giants still win with the offensive production that they got overall. So for what's looking like, you know, a new front office next year, the coaching staff, we don't know. There's still a long ways to go and a lot of tough opponents. I think, again, I don't want to get into it, so I'll just say this. I think given the circumstances surrounding who will be available in the draft, who will be available in free agency, and who will be available via realistic trade, Daniel Jones is the Giants quarterback moving forward this season and all of next season. Unless there's some crazy circumstance. And if that's going to be the case, and we cross our fingers and we hope and pray that Jason Garrett's no longer the offensive coordinator, that Joe Judge is no longer the head coach, that Dave Gettleman is fired and whoever the new person is capable of putting together an offensive line, these are the types of starts that are encouraging, right?
Right.
It's not going to wow you. You're not going to go out there and, I mean, again, like, the Giants fan base has Stockholm syndrome and is remarkably stupid at times, where a performance like that will get fans, you know, rah-rah, because the bar is the floor at this point. But it was a good game. It's a good game. The type of games that you need your quarterback to win. And, you know, I'm not ready to anoint him, but it was a good game. He played well. Yeah. I can't say anything negative about him.
Right. I think the big thing is you don't want to anoint him after one game. What you want is, see, what, like, this is the thing. Like, it's such a, people define the term franchise quarterback so differently. But, like, when you ask yourself, okay, what do you need in a franchise quarterback? What does a franchise quarterback need to do to be a franchise quarterback? It's one of these type of things where there's going to be games, there's going to be moments and times in games where you're looking at your quarterback and you're saying, hey, man, I know the situation sucks, but but I sort of need you to sort of lift this team. And listen, the Giants defense played their best game of the season. They played really, really well. I don't want to, you know, you don't want to take anything away from them. Certainly the defense was played really well.
But, yeah, we'll talk about them.
Yeah, but like Daniel Jones could have went out there and played like Sam Darnold, and people would have just chalked it up as, well, this is, it's a tough situation. No, Daniel Jones went out there. He protected the football. He knew the Saints were struggling offensively. He knew his defense sort of, you know, was playing very well. So he played well enough to put his position, put his team in position to score points. I think that's the important part here. It's not like, oh, he went out there, like, because we live in a fantasy football world now, right, where it's all about numbers and touchdowns and can you, you know, not throw interceptions. Yeah, those are important, but there are certain things that don't show up on a stat sheet where you're like, you know what, that was important, that what he did there, that helped me in terms of giving him more confidence. And I think that, and I'm not trying to like overplay it, but I also don't want people to like underplay this. Like, this was a very, very strong performance by Daniel Jones, and it's one of those performances that when you continue to ask yourself, like, hey, do I have the guy, these types of performances, these types of moments sort of lead you in the direction of saying, yeah, I think I have my guy. And you talk about the draft in the future. I think one thing so far, what Daniel Jones has proven, we still have a lot of football to play, is that, you know, he deserves, you know, he's showing that he deserves another year. Now, obviously,
yes and no. Part of it is I am underwhelmed by the draft class. I wanted to give this draft class a fair shot more than 3 fucking weeks. I had people in my mentions all the time like, oh, this class sucks. Like, bro, Zach Wilson didn't break out until, like, Thanksgiving last year, right? Like, you don't know? Like, yeah, like, Matt Corral can make some plays. Malik Willis is intriguing. Like, if a new GM and entire regime came in and said, hey, we want to make that our guy, like, fine. Like, I'll roll with that. But at this point, given what your alternative options are, you have to at least give the guy another season.
You have to, and it's not something that's pressing where it's like, I have to change the quarterback. He's shown that, hey, if you put certain things around me, I can be successful. And what he also showed is, hey, 1 week where there's an unprecedented amount of injuries on the offensive side of the ball, you know, I can play well enough to put you in position to win a game. And I think that he did that. You got to give him credit for it. These are the types of performances that I wanted to see. I sort of put more stock in something like this than him going out and throwing for 300 yards and having a pretty stat sheet against a bad football team, because he's done that in the past. I wanted to see him against, in a tough environment where the elements are not far from perfect, and he uplift the team offensively and they win the game. And I thought he did that. You got to give him props. It's definitely confidence boosting, not just for him, but for, as a fan, saying, okay, that was impressive. Let's see what else happens down the road. You can't answer the question in 1 week. It's going to take time. You have to be patient with it. You can't be too high, too low about the situation. You let it play out and you be honest with it. And right now, like, if the season ended right now, I come away saying, okay, I would like, given the circumstances that are outside the organization with the draft and with free agency and all that, I come away saying, you know what? I feel comfortable running it back with Daniel Jones. I just know I got to do X, Y, and Z for him.
Sure. Yeah. Should we talk about the defense?
The defense. Azeez Ojulari, I think, had a good performance. But I think we just have to, like, we can't get too high on it.
Listen, I know exactly what you're saying. I had the same exact thought.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I love Azeez Ojulari. I jumped up when we drafted him.
Listen, me too. And you're talking to a guy who, like, I've been so thirsty for a decent pass rusher for the last fucking 4 years, right, since they traded JPP,
right,
that I anointed Lorenzo Carter my pick for Defensive Rookie of the Year. People forget that, all right? The numbers alone are great. Just want to keep doing it against higher level of competition. That is – pretty much like my end goal here. 5.5 sacks, 5.5 tackles for losses. Do I think that he is the Giants' alpha pass rusher of the future? No. Do I think that he could be a really, really good, excellent even second? Yes.
Absolutely. I agree with
that's,
you.
That's where I'm at.
I think the big thing, I still don't know if he can be sort of an alpha pass rusher. I'm not going to write it off. I think what I want to see is, and it's similar to what Daniel, I want to see consistency. I want to see next week, you know, going against the Chiefs, can Aziz Ojulari show up and have a performance? I think, like I said, because, like sacks are a great like stat, and people look at it and say he had 2.5 sacks. But I want to see if Aziz Ojulari can continue to get to the passer consistently like he was against Carolina. That's what I want to see. And if he's able to do that, then you're like, okay, wow, this is, you know, we got something special here. He had a great game, and it's awesome for his progression as a rookie. And obviously he was a second round pick, and you want to continue to see that going forward. I definitely think that he is better than what they currently have with Lorenzo Carter and Shane Zimenez. I just want to see if he can continue to do this more often throughout the season before I just anoint him as sort of the alpha pass rusher that the Giants need.
Yeah, I'm on the same page.
The other part of the defense is it's becoming clear to me that the Giants secondary, or excuse me, their safeties, they had like Logan Ryan and Xavier McKinney, and I noticed this throughout the game, they're almost like the same player. Like I feel like okay. Xavier McKinney is just a younger version of Logan Ryan, and I don't know, like, now with Jabril Peppers gone, like, can Xavier McKinney play in that box role? Can he come up and sort of play that, you know, not necessarily box safety, but can he play in the box? Because the Giants, like, I understand it, like, Jabril Peppers, you know, I don't think he has a future here. But his role as sort of being that in-the-box hybrid linebacker safety, because their linebacker situation is so weak, losing him, I think it's a pretty, I'm not going to say big loss, but it's a significant missing piece for the Giants defense. So I don't know if McKinney can come into the box and be that, play that Peppers role to a certain extent. And I know Logan Ryan can't. So that I think this opens the door for the Giants linebacking core to get even more exposed, especially if they're not able to generate a pass rush.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's going to be interesting next week on Monday Night Football against the Chiefs, against an offense that, listen, I see a lot of chatter on social media and on NFL Live, on ESPN, about, you know, this so-called demise of the Chiefs offense. And it's comical to me. This is going to be undoubtedly, you know, maybe with the exception of the Cowboys, the Giants' toughest challenge on defense the entire season. Like, this is really, 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 is going to be the test.
The Bucs, too.
And the Bucs.
Yeah.
But the Chiefs, like, I tweeted these stats to our good friend Dan Schneier earlier when discussing, like, this narrative about the Chiefs' offense. They're third in total yards. They're fourth in total passing yards. And eighth in total points scored, including last week when they got 3 points
right
against the Titans, right? Like, these are impressive numbers. This is going to be a big test for the Giants defense.
It is going to be a huge test. And it's sort of like with the Chiefs is, can we legitimately expect Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes to have back-to-back bad offensive performances?
Duds? No. It's not happening.
Like, can you legitimately sit there and say to yourself, like, this can happen again? Like, I have a hard time seeing that. So I think, A, the Giants are going into a hostile environment in Kansas City. I think all the pressure is on the Chiefs. I think the Giants are playing with house money at this point. So it's not like the Giants are going in there with pressure. I think the Giants are going to have to score points to win this game. They're not going to hold the Chiefs offense. And I might be obviously being Captain Obvious here, but sort of the, like I agree with you, sort of the stuff I'm seeing. The Chiefs issue, yes, Patrick Mahomes is turning the ball over, but every time the Chiefs play offense, it's like they're trying to hit a home run, right? They're trying to score on every play instead of, you know, 10, 11 play drives to you know, get points. They're trying to do it on every single play.
Yep.
And the reason for that is because their defense is a joke. I mean,
shout out to Steve Spagnuolo, baby.
It's crazy. I mean, I think he
You know what's funny? You know what's funny? One of the most predictable cycles in the NFL is the Ryan Fitzpatrick cycle.
Right?
Sign somewhere as a backup, starter gets injured, comes in, has a few good games, then has a few bad games, gets benched, gets signed by another team a year later, and the cycle goes on.
Right.
We're seeing an even more predictable cycle develop with Steve Spagnuolo defenses.
Yes.
Where Steve Spagnuolo goes somewhere, a team is desperate for a defensive coordinator, they bring him in, he dominates with a really good pass rush with some elite players. After a year or two, that defense becomes incredibly stale and becomes literally like bottom three or four in the NFL. He gets fired, he goes somewhere, he's an assistant, he takes a year off, and then this whole cycle starts over again. This is what we're seeing right now with the Chiefs' defense.
Yes.
They're awful.
They're very bad. And the crazy part about it is there was a clip from the game against the Titans where they're sort of – oh, actually, he is their best defensive player, Chris Jones. There was – I mean, it looked really bad in terms of effort. And you and I have seen, you know, bad effort from defensive players. We've seen that for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Chris Jones didn't even want to – it was almost like he was playing tag with Derrick Henry. He literally just touched him. I mean, he literally just touched him. There was no effort, and the clip sort of went viral. I'm surprised it's not being picked up more and more throughout the media. But I think the Chiefs, their defense, if there is any hope of them, well, I think there is hope because you have Patrick Mahomes. But defensively, I think they need to make a change at defensive coordinator now, where I don't know who's on their defensive staff, but I think the issues are more than just, you know, bad players. I think it's also they might have problems in terms of their players' thoughts on the scheme and how they're not, maybe not all in, or I don't know. But when I saw that clip of Chris Jones, I was like, oh, this is more than just a bad defense. Now this is a team that's not really – defense is not really – they're not, the effort is not there. And if Chris Jones is not showing effort, then I mean, that's a problem. So it's a bad defense. We'll see what happens with the Giants in terms of, can they get some of these skill position player guys back? But it's tough. It's a really, really tough position that the Giants are in. I actually think that this game, it's not going to be a high scoring game. Like, I don't think the Chiefs are going to come in.
I agree with you, but for a bad reason.
Why?
I think that Joe Judge is going to go in there and think that he has to take the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands to effectively have a shot. Not take advantage of one of the league's worst defenses, but, hey, I'm going to go run, pass. I'm going to punt on the fucking 43-yard line. I'm going to play for field position because my defense dominated a really, really bad Carolina offense yesterday. And I'm going to try to outsmart Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. And that's how we're going to win. And I think that's the mistake that they're going to make. And they're going to try to be ultra conservative. They're going to try to run clock because they know that this offense can put up a lot of points. And when I say that offense, I mean the Chiefs. And it's going to fuck them. That's what I think.
Well, what's the – well, are you saying that they got to go toe-to-toe with the Chiefs' offense?
Yes.
I don't think they can do that. They do not have the personnel.
But you have to, because otherwise you might as well wave the white flag.
Well, I think that
I'd rather you go down fighting instead of try to be conservative in the first half, realize, oh, shit, we're down three scores in the third quarter, and then start passing.
But I don't think that you can play – like, I get what you're saying. Like, so there's a couple things. First of all, you're right. You can't – like, if you get into Chiefs' territory – it's got to be four downs. You can't settle for field goals. You can't be punting on fourth and two from the 39-yard line. Like, you got to be aggressive there. But the the mindset of let me try to keep Mahomes on the sideline, I do agree with that. I do agree with the long sustained drives. I do agree with, hey, let's try to wear this defense out. They're already a frustrated defense. I mean, I just mentioned it. I do think there's a lot of frustration there. Let's see if we can sort of be methodical with it, you know, rather than, and that doesn't mean you don't take shots. I think you can be methodical and be aggressive, but I don't think that you can just sit there.
What do you think that entails for Joe Judge and Jason Garrett?
Well, I think for starters, it's so tough because like,
and is Saquon going to be back?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think
you honestly, have, that's it's probably a good thing because if they have Saquon back, they probably go run. Oh fuck! It's 3rd and 7. What do we do?
Well, I think you sort of have to play. You sort of got to be like Kyle Shanahan a little bit, where you got to, and I hate to use this, but you really have to establish a run game in this game. I know you're looking at me like I'm crazy, but I do, like, I think you have to be able to run the football in this game. Like, you will
run it once you have a lead.
I agree. But what my point is that I, like, you can't sit there and say, okay, I'm looking at the other side of the field and I see Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, right? And I turn to my left and I see Nate Solder, Matt Peart, and I turn to my right and I see Dante Pettis and Devonta Booker. And I'm thinking, okay, with these guys, I'm going to go toe-to-toe with that guy and I'm going to beat that offense 35-30. I just don't think that that's possible. I understand, like,
Well, you know what? Vegas doesn't think it's possible either. It's why the Giants are 10-point underdogs.
No one's
saying that we expect the Giants to go in there and win, but you can't go in there with a losing philosophy. And in my eyes, that's being ultra conservative. You have to attack, dude. We've lived this. We've lived through the Spags defenses. Like, we know when it rains, it pours. I know. Okay, it's Dante Pettis. It's Evan Engram dropping balls. Like you know that there are going to be guys open. You just know it.
And again, what my thing is I'm not saying you be conservative, but what you need in this game is you need those long sustained drives. Again, I'm not saying
I agree, but. Listen, we agree. My only thing is that we've seen when the Giants try to create those long sustained drives, we see run for nothing on first down, throw for 2 yards to the tight end on second down, 3rd and long, incomplete, punt. I'm saying you could have those long sustained drives, but you need to pick apart the defense. It can't be like just running up the gut and trying to bleed clock. Like, you can go 80 yards on this defense if you just dink and dunk down the field. It's possible.
And that's what I think you have to do. And listen, if you're asking me right now, do I think the Giants can score 30 points in this game? No, I don't. I don't think that this offense, especially with the pieces that are missing now, I don't know who they're going to get back. Maybe they get back Kadarius Toney. Maybe they get back Kenny Golladay. I don't know. It's still early in the week. But hypothetically speaking, let's say they get Kadarius Toney back, right? I don't think
no, let's that you just, can... Let's go with Shepard.
Okay, let's say they get Sterling.
And that's better because Shepard knows how to read a zone and just sit down and catch a pass.
That's what I'm saying. I think you got to be methodical with it. You take your shots. You don't do what Pete Carroll did the other night.
No, but that's what I'm afraid Jason Garrett's going to do.
You don't
see,
do
see
that.
What I'm saying?
You don't
see what
yeah,
I'm saying though?
I agree with you. Yes, but you don't do that. You don't do that. You have to throw the football. You have to push the ball down the field. But I also think that you can't sort of say I'm going to beat the Chiefs by, you know, going toe to toe with Mahomes. I just don't think that's possible. You're going to have to rely on your defense. And at the same time, you're going to have to rely on the ability to run the football. You got to move the ball, not just through the air, on the ground. It's just in this game. I'm not saying you can do it for an entire season, but for this particular game, given the circumstances, you will not win this game thinking that you can go score to score with the Chiefs. It's not possible. It's not possible. But if you play smart football, you play methodical football, you – I hate to say this, but you at times go dink and dunk and move the football down the field. You frustrate that defense. You tire that defense. That's how you give yourself a chance, and you keep that offense on the sideline. That's the reality of it. If they play like they played against the Seahawks played, you're right. They have no shot, obviously. But if you come out and you know, for example, you throw the ball on first down or you take your shots down the field, you're not afraid to let your quarterback, you know, make plays, you give yourself a shot.
Division rival Eagles put up 30 against the Chiefs defense.
They did.
They're awful.
But a lot of it was, you know.
Whatever. You can move the ball against this
defense. You know what else you got to do?
Don't be afraid. Go in there, put your balls on the table.
You know what else you got to do defensively? You got to force turnovers. Give yourself short fields. The Chiefs turn the football over. They have a turnover problem.
Yes, but it's like a Preston Parker, Reuben Randall kind of problem. That's been like half their interceptions. It's been ugly.
I got it, but again, like I really
listen. It's still a problem. You're right.
It is.
You can't excuse it. It happens.
The Eagles forced turnovers, and that's why they're able to give themselves positive field position. I also think special teams is going to be very important in this game for the Giants.
Oh God! Don't tell that to Joe Judge.
No. In terms of, hey, you can't give the Chiefs positive field position. If the Giants are going to win this game, it's going to be an old school type game where, and I really hate to say this, but running the football is important. Establishing the run is going to be important.
Just digging that hole deeper.
Dink and dunk, keeping Patrick Mahomes on the sideline. I don't see this being, to me, if the Giants are going to win, this is a Big Ten type football game. They're not going to win this game if it's a Big 12 style football game. Sorry, I just don't see it.
Agree to disagree.
That's my thing. We sort of moved away from the Panthers game, but I want to talk to you about Matt Rhule for a second.
Sure.
Him and Joe Judge have the same record as head coaches in the NFL. I'm not asking if we made the right decision or anything like that, but why do you think the narrative around Matt Rhule is different to Joe Judge?
The quarterback situation. So understand, like he comes in. He had Teddy.
He had Cam Newton. He got rid of him, and then he said, "I'm signing Teddy Bridgewater."
Right. So he came in, washed up veteran. All right. There's no option that I like. I'll go with Teddy. Year two, pretty much the same thing. Like, I was not a Justin Fields guy. You were a Mac Jones guy. I was not a Mac Jones guy. So unless Matt Rhule, who based on, listen, everything you know about the guy and how, like, quote-unquote, innovative he is and how he thinks and him bringing in Joe Brady as his offensive coordinator, you can sort of assess that the only two guys that he would have wanted in that draft were Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, neither of which he was capable of getting unless he was going to mortgage the future, which in the middle of a rebuild, he's not going to do. So he goes, all right, what's the next best option? Whatever, I'll go Sam Darnold for a year. Not a great choice. It's where each team is in the rebuilding process, right? The Giants have had Dan Jones for however many years. They've had Dave Gettleman. There's a lot of turmoil. For Matt Rhule, he's been given that leash, right? He comes in. He says, I want this sports science program. I want my offensive coordinator. I want this. I want that. And just because they're not competitive in year two, especially without any semblance of a franchise quarterback, I don't think it's fair to pass judgment on him. I really don't. For the Giants, I think a lot of those things were supposed to be in place. At least that's what I'm being told by the people that are Joe Judge supporters. So to me, I think the situations are entirely different. I think if we look at each team in 2 years, I think the Panthers, once they figure out the quarterback situation and they manage to get a guy they want, whether it's by trade, even though Deshaun Watson won't waive his no trade clause for anyone but the Dolphins, which I think is ridiculous, by the way, or they finally find someone in the draft that they like, which is going to be tough in this year's draft too, then we're not going to know. It's honestly sort of similar to the Colts situation. Once Andrew Luck retired, they've been in quarterback no man's land where their roster was not bad enough to go and have a top pick, but they've sort of been working with journeymen trying to figure it out. And again, like, it's only not even two full years of Matt Rhule. So it is, you know, go ahead. You wanted to interject.
So I'm going to counter you a little bit, right? I'm going to put you on the spot.
That's fine.
Right? You said that Matt Rhule, and for the record, Matt Rhule was my number one option for the Giants when they were looking for a head coach, right? When Matt Rhule came in, one of his first decisions, because he was sort of the de facto GM when he came in, was he gave Christian McCaffrey a $64 million contract extension. Now, you said Matt Rhule is a big forward-thinking guy. Paying a running back is not forward-thinking. Would you agree?
Say that again.
So when he came in, one of the first moves that he made, the first big move, was giving McCaffrey a $64 million contract extension. Now, you and I both agree the Panthers were rebuilding. This is year two of a rebuild. And, you know, Matt Rhule is a forward-thinking guy. I do agree to an extent. But paying a running back $64 million is not really forward-thinking, right?
Agreed. I would agree with you.
The contract to Teddy Bridgewater wasn't a good one. So you got to look at this and say to yourself, like, I do think, look, for the record, you cannot force Joe Judge on another GM. If there's a GM, like, I'm on a firm believer that, first of all, there's a lot of football left to be played. We don't know what's going to happen. So you can't write Joe Judge's obituary yet. You also can't grant him another year yet. We have to wait and see what happens. But I don't understand why Matt Rhule is getting a pass, but Joe Judge is not. Joe Judge could very well have thought, hey, we're not ready to go all in, but ownership, which you and I agree on, says, hey, we need to go all in. We need to win now. And Joe Judge could not have probably not have done that if he had that same sort of power that Matt Rhule had, where he is the de facto GM. Now, I agree that, you know, Judge hasn't been a good head coach. His coaching decisions have cost this team games. But I don't think Matt Rhule has necessarily done a good job in Carolina. And I bring this up because I see a lot of people, I see the narrative around Matt Rhule is different than Joe Judge, but if you switch spots and you put Matt Rhule here and you put Joe Judge in Carolina, and they both, the decision making is the same, are people calling for Joe Judge to be fired? And are people calling for Matt Rhule, or excuse me, are people calling for Joe Judge, patience with Joe Judge, but are calling Matt Rhule to be fired?
I can't answer that for you. Like, the situation, I'm serious, situation, it's apples to bananas. It really is.
The only reason I'm bringing this up is because it's sort of like with last year or Daniel Jones' rookie season with the Darnold and Daniel Jones conversation was a lot of it's people still living on pre-draft with those two quarterbacks. But with this situation is, I think a lot of people are still looking at this from a, you know, the hiring process where Matt Rhule was such a coveted candidate and Joe Judge sort of came out of nowhere, where it's like, my only thing is like, switch the spots. Like I said, put Joe Judge in Carolina, right? Put Matt Rhule in New York. The decision-making is the same. Are we still preaching patience with Matt Rhule, or excuse me, with Joe Judge in Carolina? And are we still saying, hey, Matt Rhule's got to go?
Again, like, I don't think that anyone can answer that. Like, does Matt Rhule come to New York knowing that Dave Gettleman is a jackass and that he's going to have Jason Garrett forced upon him? Like, no. Is Joe Judge going to take the job down in Carolina knowing that there's not a quarterback that he wants and he's going to have a journeyman back-to-back years? I think, based on what we know right now, based on what we knew during the hiring process, you got to let it play out. Like, there are too many pieces for the Panthers that are not in place. The offensive line is very bad. They lost their first-round pick this year for the year already. They don't have a quarterback. Like, listen, I agree with you. Like, the McCaffrey signing, bad. The record, bad. But, like, You have to love that he brought in Joe Brady. You have to understand that he signed a contract as long as he did with the Panthers because he has a vision. And very rarely in less than a year and a half are those visions going to play out in full. So it's two totally different
situations. But can we say that about the same thing about Joe Judge?
No, not really. And it's because the timelines are totally mismatched.
But the timeline was not a Joe. We don't know if that's a Joe Judge timeline. That's a John Mara timeline.
But it doesn't, like, but it doesn't matter. Theory. But you have to view it through that lens.
Ah, man. See, that's where I'm going to disagree with you.
That's fine.
I'm not advocating for Joe Judge to stay. I'm on record. The new GM should make that decision. I'm totally on that. To me, this is a narrative thing. I totally get what you're saying. But again, it's very simple to me. The decision making is the same. The using the number seven pick, a six pick on Derek Brown, the defensive tackle, all that is the same. Just switch the spots. Are we still preaching patience with Joe Judge as Carolina Panthers head coach?
Name the cornerstone pieces that are down there in Carolina outside of Christian McCaffrey. That's an awful team. They're awful. It's been a year and a half with the Giants. Since Gettleman, you signed Kenny Galladay. You have Evan Engram,
right.
Saquon Barkley, Kadarius Toney. Bring in Kyle Rudolph. You draft Andrew Thomas. You gave all this money to a few pieces on the offensive line. You gave Leonard Williams the big contract. Like, these are names that you brought in James Bradbury. You signed Adoree Jackson. Like, these are all, like, huge names with a lot of capital behind them, a lot of money behind them. And listen, we've had this conversation before about, like, where teams are in the life cycle of their rebuild and what the expectations are. And given what the Giants did, the expectation is that this team should not be 2-5 right now. I think we all agree that the team should have won a couple games early on. The pieces are here, and you and I have discussed ad nauseum through the first third of the season how often that they have not been put in positions to succeed. Like, these are good players that have not been put in position in some cases. On the offensive line, you can disagree. I don't think the talent's there. Pass rush, the talent hasn't been there for years. But in terms of the running back, the tight end, the wide receivers, like, this has been an underperforming roster given the talent that's there. And that's why I think that the situations are wildly different.
But I think Matt Rhule's decision-making has not been great either. I mean, he's the de facto GM there.
That's fine.
I mean,
you pay
Christian McCaffrey that money.
That's fine.
I have to question
and that's fine. And I disagree with that. But I'm saying the situation is apples to bananas based on the talents that's there and the timeline that's there. That's why you can't give a direct yes or no answer. And that's why the narratives are different.
So do you think that... Okay, I'll throw another one.
Go ahead.
This is a great conversation, by the way. Was paying Christian McCaffrey $64 million the right decision?
No, I just said that. No.
For a team that was the wrong decision.
Awful
right?
decision. They should have traded him.
Was paying Teddy Bridgewater, instead of being aggressive to possibly move up one more spot to get Justin Herbert, the right decision?
Maybe he didn't maybe he didn't like Herbert.
Okay, that's fine. We know the Giants liked Justin Herbert.
Well, not enough to wait a year.
I got it. Now, the Carolina Panthers, they need an offensive tackle, right?
Sure.
They need offensive line help. He passed on Mekhi Becton. He passed on Jedrick Wills. He passed on Tristan Wirfs. I'm just saying. We're talking about a forward-thinking guy, but and Derek Brown's a good player, don't get me wrong. I'm just looking at his decision-making, and I'm saying to myself, if you are a Panthers fan, and then he said after the game, and this was pretty funny, that we lost the game because we didn't establish the run more. That doesn't sound like a forward-thinking guy to me.
It's coach speak, but I get it.
He's publicly criticized his coordinators. Again, I'm with Matt Rhule was my number one target. I'm just saying, right now, if you look at Joe Judge and you look at Matt Rhule, I think we're not being fair to Joe Judge a little bit.
Matt Rhule did not have to work with Dave Gettleman. I will heavily disagree.
Matt Rhule did not have to work with Dave Gettleman.
No. You have to amend that statement. We are being entirely fair to Joe Judge. We might not be being mean enough to Matt Rhule. That's fine.
So that means we're not being fair to Joe Judge.
No. You said that we're being too mean to Joe Judge. We're being
unfair to Joe Judge.
No, we're being very fair to Joe Judge. we may need to be a little bit meaner to Matt Rhule. Fine, I'll concede that to you. I think comparing the two situations is impossible.
I have a tough time agreeing with that.
That's fine.
The guy came in, you're the GM. You need
You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me, do you remember, this was like 3 years ago, and I don't think we ever released the episode. We had like an hour-long argument about Jerry Reese.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what this reminds me of.
Anyway, this reminds me of a couple years ago when we talked about Sam Darnold versus Daniel Jones and how even though Daniel Jones had a very promising rookie year, the narratives didn't change around him, but Sam Darnold continued to be a bad quarterback and people just continued to chalk it up as, well, he's just in a terrible situation.
Yeah, well, he was. And then it got even worse. And then he just turned out to be bad.
Yeah. My thing is that so much of people's opinion, and I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about in general, is that they continue to use their sort of, in this case, pre-hired process to judge the head coach. I'll be honest, I'm with you. I think the only thing that I will say is, if you're telling me to preach patience with Matt Rhule, then got to preach patience with Joe Judge too, right?
Sure. Whatever makes you happy.
That's all I'm saying.
Let me ask you a question. You want Matt Rhule and Joe Brady, or you want Joe Judge and Jason Garrett?
Joe Brady has not been impressive in Carolina.
Okay, so you'd prefer Jason Garrett with everything that you've seen?
No, I didn't say that.
Oh,
I didn't
okay. Say that. So that make a pick.
I mean, obviously, you give me Matt Rhule. I'll take my chances with Matt Rhule and Joe Brady.
Okay, there you go.
My confidence is not high in that. I don't think that. Okay, I'll say that. I don't think the gap is that much higher right now. I don't think the gap is that big.
All right. That's a good conversation to revisit in 2 years.
Okay, is Joe Brady coaching LSU by next year?
I think they're going to try. They're definitely going to try.
Is he a head coach next year?
No, I don't think so. You know who's a head coach next year?
Who?
Kellen Moore.
Can I throw you another one?
Sure.
Jason Garrett.
Yeah, maybe for the Raiders.
I think Jason Garrett's going to be head coach next year.
God, we can only hope.
What's today's date? October 27th?
Something like that.
Mark it down, folks.
Mark it down.
He will be a head coach next year, Jason Garrett.
All right.
You got like that?
I like it.
So that I specifically put that on our little rundown that we send each other that I wanted to discuss Joe Judge and Matt Rhule. So, yeah. It's just interesting. I just think it's sort of you're contradicting yourself when you're not you, but in general, when we say patience, Matt Rhule, but hey, Joe Judge, I need you to, you know, build me a winning roster in a year.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Oh my God! I just had a minor panic attack. Said Audacity quit out. Okay. All right. So, all right. We'll revisit this in 2 years.
Where is it? Look, I'm with you. New GM. He's got to make the call. It's not John Mara. It's not Chris Mara. It's not Steve Tisch. It's John Mara. Also, can I just say something? John Mara taking a victory lap. I was about to say lap dance. Taking a victory lap.
After surprised? Are you surprised?
Not the slightest.
No, he's talking after slightest. A victory.
And to me, Matt, he cares, like John Mara cares so much about optics.
Yeah, of course.
Like, he'll look so bad if he lost to the guy that he didn't want to interview because the contract demand was so high.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so pathetic. Like, give me a break with this owner, man. Like, holy crap. Anyways, you want to go to questions?
Yeah, you can pick them.
All right. All right. Likely outcome seems to be Joe Judge staying as coach with a new outside GM and Daniel Jones staying at quarterback. I wouldn't be fairly confident saying that.
Yeah, where is that coming from?
Yeah. Where do the Giants go with the first two picks in the draft? O-line and then edge, I would say. I dipped into the NFL draft a lot the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
Luckily,
as we do.
There's a this is a really good class for pass rushers.
and offensive line. Yeah. Yeah.
I would say right now, my top rated offensive player is Evan Neal, the tackle from Alabama.
Yep.
Yeah. And my top rated defensive player, obviously the Oregon defensive end, but the Notre Dame safety, Kyle Hamilton, is really good. If you're looking at pass rusher, Aiden Hutchinson, Michigan, really good player. Cincinnati edge rusher, Majay Sanders, a good pass rusher. I really like his bend, by the way. I think the bend is very important with the pass rusher. Majay Sanders, really good. Ohio State's, I think his name is Zach Harrison. I watched him a little bit. I haven't dipped into him a lot. Very good player. The beauty about this draft is the Giants are going to have two, I think, top 10 picks. And there is a lot of talent that they can look at in terms of offensive line and pass rush. And I think they can get two really good prospects with those two picks.
I agree. Yeah, I think it's offensive really line and pass rush. I'd be thrilled.
Yeah. And the thing is, there's great value there in the draft. You don't have to reach for a guy. And you can get two of them in the first round.
I agree. I'm excited.
Yeah, it is. Oh, that's a good question. Better chance of being a New York Giant next year, Jabril Peppers or Evan Engram?
Evan Engram.
Really? I'm going to go with Jabril Peppers.
Yeah, Engram.
I think Peppers is a better
if Engram's not moved at the deadline, this coaching staff is like infatuated with him for some reason.
Yeah. Apparently there's multiple teams interested. I read a report from German Fowler of ESPN.
Yeah, it's just whether or not the Giants are interested in moving him.
Yeah. I think they have to be, right? If you're not re-signing him, you gotta move on. And Joe Judge said, hey, look, I'm thinking long term. Well, you don't plan on keeping a guy. Well, first of all, are we sure he's not going to keep Evan Engram?
No, like, I don't think they move anyone.
No. I'm saying, do you think that it's a foregone conclusion that this is Evan Ingram's last year with the team?
No, I don't.
I mean, neither. Like, that's the crazy part.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I don't. So I can see in a world where Jabril Peppers and Evan Engram are New York Giants next year. I can really see that.
Yep.
But if you're asking me more likely, I would say Peppers.
I'm going Engram.
This is a good one. I'm going to ask you this. What win-loss record do you think is the threshold for keeping or dumping Joe Judge?
I mean, the bar is so low.
It was 6-10 last year.
Yeah, I'm thinking 6.
6, you keep him?
Do I keep him, or does John Mara keep him?
No. I'm saying, like, I get you'll get rid of him anyway. But I'm talking about where's that threshold for you? Where they like where are they 2-5 right now?
Yeah.
What's your threshold in terms of like, okay, if we finish with this record, I can be like, okay, I can deal with Joe Judge for another year, or he's earned another year in my opinion.
You're asking me personally.
Yes, I'm asking you personally. I agree with your what you think John Mara's threshold is.
8 wins.
6 games, I do agree. So 6 more in
yes.
You think. Okay. Aziz Ojulari, final year, sack total, over under 10. He's at 5.5 now.
Under.
Yeah, I'm under 2. I'm going to say he's going to finish with 9 sacks.
Okay.
What would you accept, or what do you think is an acceptable trade offer for Saquon Barkley?
Oh, wow. These are good questions.
Yeah. I'm not in the field of just giving him away. I'm not. Because at the end of the
day, if he comes back, and he plays the rest of this year healthy, I could see a team giving up a second.
And so if he comes back and he plays like he did his rookie year, like he did his...
No, not even. If he comes back, he plays like he did his rookie year, I think the Giants could get it first. So I'll go second, because I don't think he's going to reach that level.
What about, would you play him out this year and next year, and then go from there, if he's playing well enough in your mind?
I would still trade him.
Okay. So yeah. you would say second round pick would for you.
That's fine. Like, yeah.
I'm willing to, okay.
See ya. Sayonara.
I think if he comes back, plays well, it has to be more than just a second. I would say second and a fourth, maybe second, fourth.
Oh, sure, yeah.
An inspiring player, yeah, something like
in
that.
In terms of, yeah.
Still, like, they're,
the center of the package has to be a second.
Right. Oh, hey, Ethan, why don't you watch the All 22 film like other podcasts?
Oh, no comment. No comment. No comment.
I watch enough seeing him one time. Although I did rewatch the Panthers game, by the way. Okay. Brian Burns is a star. Is a star.
Yeah, well, a star. Give credit to Matt Rhule for that one.
That's not a Matt Rhule pick. That was not a Matt Rhule pick.
No, not pick, but they. He wasn't drafted by them, was he?
No. Brian Burns was drafted in 2019.
By the Panthers?
Yes.
Oh, got it. Okay. I don't know why I thought they traded for him.
No.
Okay.
No. They did trade for C.J. Henderson, the corner from the Jaguars.
Yes.
By the way, was C.J. Henderson playing? Did he play last week?
I have no idea.
I was going to say, I have a take. I think Brian Burns right now is better than Chase Young.
Okay. I mean, this season, you're certainly not wrong.
I gave you two hot takes right now. I said Jason Garrett's going to be head coach next year, and Brian Burns is a better pass rusher than Chase Young.
All right.
Biggest need for the team in the offseason. Would you say edge rush right now or offensive line?
Offensive line.
I'm going to say edge rusher, man. I think they really need
edge. They need both. Like, bad.
They do.
Like,
there's no wrong answer here.
I'm probably just saying that because of recency bias. Like, Leonard Williams and Azeez Ojulari had good games. But, like, at the same time, like, I can't watch. Like, they don't have a right tackle. They don't have a center. They don't have a right guard. Like, it's bad.
I'm not passing on Evan Neal, by the way, if he's there.
Okay.
That's my pick. That would be an awesome pairing with him and Andrew Thomas. How confident are you Andrew Thomas is the team's franchise left tackle?
Oh, very confident at this point. But it's just 80%? Whether or not... Yeah, definitely. It's just whether or not he can stay healthy. Yeah.
To me, that's the one real cornerstone piece with this franchise right now is Andrew Thomas.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Okay.
That's all I got for you. All
right.
Oh, you want to give me a score with the Chiefs?
Oh, man.
Sort of been slacking on our predictions.
35-21.
So you think they keep it close? I'm with you a little bit. I think they do keep it close in the first half.
And I mean, 35-21 is not exactly close. Two touchdowns.
14 points.
That's a lot in the NFL. It's a lot.
I know, but it could be a situation where it's a 17-14 game at halftime, and then Chiefs pull away in the second half.
I guess. All right, whatever.
I think the Chiefs win by two scores, but I think it's going to be close in the first half.
Okay. All right.
But yeah.
All right.
This is a... I don't know if it's a get-right game for the Chiefs, but it's a... Because I don't know if they're ever going to be right again, but certainly it could get ugly for the Giants.
Sure. All right, shall we?
Yes, we shall.
Follow us on Twitter.
Wrap it up for me.
Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. And we'll talk to you next week.
Peace.